Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we have some hot East County news, starting with some good news from CAL FIRE as we gear up for fire season. Then we'll tell you about Duncan Thumper and why a giant costumed rabbit will be hopping along the campaign trail at a local congressman's appearances. From Caltrans, listen up for an important notice about closure of Highway 78 between Ramona and Escondido over the next 4 weekends for emergency roadway repairs. Then we'll tell you why an El Cajon Elementary School teacher and her immigrant students have made national news in the Washington Post. Next up, hear findings of a disturbing report about rising anti-Semitism on college campuses. Then we'll have an update on a Border Angels activist from San Diego who went missing in Mexico and has now been found but with injuries after an abduction. On our Capitol Report, hear about President Trump's new executive order requiring federal agencies to buy American. Then on our Green Scene Report, hear about Earth Day volunteers needed in local state parks and about an Earth Day March for Science taking place this Saturday in San Diego, where thousands are expected to join in. We'll also have news about the University of California's decision to divest from private prisons and about a bill working its way through the state legislature to phase out our state's use of private prison companies. Liz Alper has some good news for sports fans about a major basketball tournament coming to San Diego State. On our health report, the County of San Diego wants to hear from you if you visited the San Diego Safari Park recently and came into contact with a wild bat, since a bat with rabies was recently found at a popular eating area in the park. Plus, hear about Prescription Drug Take-Back Day and where you can return your unwanted medications to keep them out of the hands of children, criminals, or drug addicts. On the second half of our show, on Destination East County, hear about all the top festivals and events coming up, such as a stargazing party, a rodeo, an eco-folk musical for Earth Day, concerts, a butterfly and a garden festival, open house at a camel dairy, wine tasting festivals, and more. Our newsmaker interview today is John Ford, a young Navy veteran who wound up homeless in San Diego shortly after he left the military along with his wife. He'll be talking about how he got back on his feet and the gaps he believes should be filled to better help those who served our country when they return home. And finally, with fire season approaching, learn how you can sign up for a community emergency response training or CERT team program through Heartland Fire and Rescue so that you can be prepared to help yourself, your family, and your neighborhood if a disaster strikes. We'll have all these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. As temperatures rise region-wide, CAL FIRE is beefing up preparations for fire season in San Diego County by opening the Ramona Air Attack Base. Starting Monday, April 17th, CAL FIRE is now staffing 2 air tankers and 1 air tactical platform at the Ramona Air Attack Base, the oldest air base in CAL FIRE's system of 13. Both of these air tankers are capable of delivering 1,200 gallons of fire retardant per drop and have a maximum operating range of 500 miles when fully loaded. In addition to the aircraft positioned at Ramona, CAL FIRE operates 21 air tankers, 14 air tactical platforms, and 12 Super Huey helicopters, making up the largest department-owned fleet of firefighting aircraft in the world. Ironically, the U.S. Forest Service has refused to land its air tankers at the Ramona Air Base, claiming the runway there is too short. But those gutsy CAL FIRE pilots were already landing and taking off with the same planes there during last year's wildfires with no problems. Supervisor Diane Jacob and other local officials have long sought to persuade the Forest Service to use Ramona's airbase rather than have delays while federal aircraft fly in from an adjacent county. The U.S. Forest Service has continued to refuse that request, but did agree to move tankers to Brownfield and Otay Mesa for faster positioning in the southern portion of San Diego County. Meanwhile, CAL FIRE crews will again be protecting our mountains and rural regions and other areas in our county from the Ramona Air Base this year. That's good news, since this could be a serious wildfire season after all that new growth fueled by the winter record rains starts drying out across our backcountry. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Hopping down the bunny trail and the campaign trail, Duncan Thumper will soon be popping up at Congressman Duncan Hunter's events to draw attention to his campaign finance controversies that have sparked a criminal investigation by the Justice Department. A political action committee named Bunny Pack has announced that an activist in a rabbit costume will be following the local congressman to draw attention to Hunter's use of $60,000 in campaign funds for personal expenses. That includes a lavish Italian vacation, jewelry, video games, and $600 to fly his son's pet rabbit cross-country first class. Hunter has claimed the expenditures were honest mistakes. He's paid back his campaign in full, but had to take out a hefty loan to do so. Bunny Pack is the brainchild of Democratic activist Sean Van Diver, a political consultant and adjunct professor at San Diego State University. Van Diver says, "This is the most ridiculous scandal I have ever heard of. Duncan Thumper, the personification of the Hunter family's pet rabbit, has his own Facebook page, Twitter account, and website. Bunny Pack is raising money to help Duncan Thumper get his messages out to explain Hunter's actions. Bunny Pack launched over Easter weekend with a message that states, "Listening to a bunny explain politics is as ridiculous as spending campaign money on personal enrichment. The good news is that Duncan Thumper is an ethics advisor and a wonderful storyteller." Hunter's office has not commented on the big-eared furry stalker, though some Hunter backers may wish for Elmer Fudd to intercept that wascally wabbit on Hunter's tail. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is Miriam Raftery with an important traffic alert from Caltrans. State Route 78 will be closed in both directions over the next 4 weekends while Caltrans crews conduct emergency repairs to stabilize the roadway and construct a retaining wall. The repairs are needed after large boulders damaged the roadway. The closures will be from Weekend Villa Road to Indian Oaks Road between Ramona and Escondido. The first weekend closure will begin this Friday, April 21st at 7 p.m. and end Monday, April 24th at 5 a.m. Detours will be in place all 4 weekends, but motorists should expect significant traffic delays on alternative routes.
Efforts by an El Cajon school to help immigrant children are now national news. The Washington Post highlighted those efforts in an article titled, "How President Trump Is and Is Not Changing What It Means to Be American." The article's author, former war correspondent Abigail Hauslauer, visited Anza Elementary School in El Cajon, where 70% of students speak a language other than English at home. Rhonda Fatoi officially teaches English to her students, but the Washington Post article observes, unofficially, she offers these children something much more profound, a vision of what it means to be an American. The story also includes interviews with families, including some who are disturbed by President Donald Trump's anti-immigrant rhetoric and actions, which have left some refugees and immigrants wondering whether it's still possible to have a promising future in America. El Cajon is home to one of the nation's largest populations of Iraqi Chaldean Christians, as well as a growing number of Muslim immigrants from the Middle East. Cajon Valley School District has taken in 836 foreign-born students this year alone, and a third are Syrian refugees. The city also has a high number of Latino immigrants, many of whom are now living in fear in the wake of Trump's aggressive deportation policies. The Washington Post reporter spoke with immigrant and refugee families in El Cajon on the ordeals that they have endured and their hopes and fears for their futures. Her story includes tales of newcomers from Iraq, Syria, and Mexico. Their challenges in adapting to American life range from culture shock over revealing dress styles to difficulties faced by large families, such as not being able to fit all of their children into a car legally. But at Anza Elementary School, the children blossom as they study science and gardening, read books, and perhaps most importantly, learn tolerance. Empathy taught here encourages all students to put themselves in others' shoes, feel fellow students' pain, and offer comfort when needed. The teacher, a daughter of Chaldean immigrants, shows her students that despite differences in cultural traditions, they can love America and belong here in a nation that has long recognized strength in diversity. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Cindy Hanna.
This is Jean Carpenter with an education report. Anti-Semitism on college campuses in the U.S. increased by 40% in 2016, and genocidal expressions doubled. Those are the disturbing findings of an annual study released this month by AMCHA, a nonprofit organization dedicated to combating anti-Semitism at colleges and universities in the United States. AMCHA is a Hebrew word meaning young people and also connotes grassroots. The study examines anti-Semitism at more than 100 public and private colleges and universities with the largest Jewish undergraduate populations. Researchers found that anti-Semitism spiked sharply last year, rising 40% on campuses most popular with Jewish students. While anti-Semitic incidents increased, the total number of schools affected by campus anti-Semitism did not. Certain schools are hotspots, accounting for the overall surge. Schools with the largest increase in anti-Semitism last year included some top academic institutions such as Columbia, Vassar, New York University, the University of Chicago, the University of Wisconsin in Madison, the University of Minnesota, and Ohio State University. All schools with surges in anti-Semitic activity also held anti-Israel divestment votes in the past year. Acts of anti-Jewish hostility, primarily motivated by historical anti-Semitism, rose by 76%. Anti-Semitic genocidal expressions doubled from 2015 to 2016, including swastikas, as well as graffiti, signs and letters calling for the killing of Jews, with some messages evoking the Holocaust. Many anti-Jewish genocidal messages also targeted students from other campus groups, such as immigrants, students of color, LGBTQ students, and those with different political ideologies, suggesting a troubling increase in hateful and intolerant behavior overall. The presence of anti-Zionist student groups and faculty who endorsed an academic boycott of Israel in 2015 proved to be strong predictors of conduct that targeted Jewish students and staff for harm in 2016, the study found. The study's researchers offered recommendations for university administrators to implement to reduce intolerance and promote free expression for all students on campuses. They also called for disciplinary actions on anyone who infringes on the free speech or civil rights of others.
Hugo Castro, the San Diego-based activist with Border Angels who disappeared last week, has been found alive after an apparent abduction near Mexico City. According to Mexico's Attorney General, an anonymous caller tipped off a special prosecutor for disappeared persons. Castro was found on a street in the Mexican city of Tlalnepantla de Baz. He was taken to a hospital for treatment of wounds apparently suffered during a kidnapping and is in stable condition. Castro was extremely fortunate to survive the ordeal. Less than 1% of the 10,000 people who have gone missing in Mexico have been found, KPBS reports. Castro, a U.S. citizen and immigrant rights activist, vanished while on his way to Querétaro, Mexico, to join a caravan aiding Haitians traveling from Central America to the U.S. in hopes of being granted asylum. Castro reportedly sought to protect migrants from being preyed upon by robbers, kidnappers seeking ransoms, and human traffickers. Castro posted a Facebook live video last Thursday, shortly before he disappeared. In it, he said his life had been threatened by a cab driver sent to pick up Haitians and stated that criminals were hunting him. He listed the highway where he was stranded and asked for someone to pick him up, adding that he didn't trust the police. Castro's partner, Gaba Cortez, met with Mexican officials before posting a notice on Facebook notifying concerned friends that Castro was found alive, adding, "Thank you to all who intervened." The Mexican government has reportedly launched an investigation in this case. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Rebecca Williamson.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
President Donald Trump is signing an executive order requiring federal agencies to buy American products and prioritize using American workers. In an effort to jumpstart the U.S. economy, the president aims to tighten up existing waivers to require approval by agency heads for making non-American procurements, GovExec reports. On Monday, Trump told reporters, "Buy American is the Trump administration's highest priority when it comes to spending taxpayer dollars. Some requirements giving preference to American-made goods are already in place, but agencies often grant waivers, such as when comparable American products are not available. Agencies will now be required to conduct a review of their procurements and of waivers granted, and will be held accountable for failures to buy American. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross has been asked to review the agency's findings and submit a report within 220 days. The effort aims to end the practice of awarding government contracts to low bidders using foreign-made content that undercuts American factories and jobs. The order also poses challenges for agencies, however. Trump's proposed federal budget has slashed money for nearly every agency, so it's unclear how realistically agencies would be able to spend more for American goods when their budgets are reduced. Short term, some products may not be available with all American-made components, though long term, the president's order could create new demands for American goods that potentially could lead to increased production and new jobs, as well as an increase in American workers paying income taxes from those new jobs created. Some critics of the announcement have called the president hypocritical, given that his businesses and his family's businesses regularly use foreign-made goods. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Rebecca Williamson with KNSJ Radio for East County Magazine with a Green Scene Report. The California State Parks Foundation invites you to volunteer to help a local state park get ready for the summer season this Earth Day, April 22nd, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Spring flowers have brought splashes of color across the sunny slopes and green pastures of parks around California. After a record-breaking season of winter rains, California's state parks are flush with wildflowers and wildlife. Winter has transitioned to spring, and that means it's also time for some spring cleaning. This year marks the 19th year of Earth Day spring cleaning in our state parks. It is easy to take our amazing state parks for granted, but these parks, your parks, would not exist without the support of volunteers like you who work to ensure that parks remain vibrant, welcoming, and accessible to all. Over the years, the California State Park Foundation's Earth Day program has provided state parks with much-needed grant funding and the people power needed to complete maintenance and improvement projects. In addition to removing invasive plant species and planting natives, volunteers are needed to clean up campsites, trails, beaches, and fencing. So this Earth Day, you can visit a state park and make a positive difference for our planet and for our community. In San Diego County, you can volunteer this Earth Day at the following state parks: Anza Borrego Desert State Park, Carlsbad State Beach, Cuyamaca Rancho State Park, San Alejo State Park, San Pascual Battlefield State Historic Park, or Torrey Pines State Natural Reserve and Beach. To sign up and get more information, you can visit calparks.org.
This Saturday, April 22nd, is Earth Day, and this year it will also be marked by a March for Science, as scientists nationwide emerge out of the lab and take to the streets in cities across the country, including here in San Diego, where thousands are expected to turn out. The scientists and their supporters are taking a stand for science as the Trump administration guts funding for scientific research and strips facts about climate change off of government websites. The scientists are rallying public support for investment in science-based facts, not politically driven fake news paid for by the fossil fuel industry. The San Diego March for Science has its own Facebook page and a website, marchforsciencesd.com. The local marchers will be rallying at the Civic Center downtown at 1100 C Street at 10 a.m. Saturday morning. The local event will include family-friendly educational information and highlight the importance of scientific research happening right here in San Diego, which is a national hub for the biotech industry, medical research, and green clean tech research. The San Diego March for Science even has its own cool-looking logo design, a hip surfing scientist inside an atom. But their mission is very serious. The local scientist's Facebook page defines the group's mission this way: "The March for Science champions publicly funded and publicly communicated science as a pillar of human freedom and prosperity. We unite as a diverse, nonpartisan group to call for science that upholds the common good and for political leaders and policymakers to enact evidence-based policies in the public interest." Nationally, the webpage marchforscience.com states, "Recent policy changes have caused heightened worry among scientists. The incredible and immediate outpouring of support has made clear that these concerns are also shared by the support of hundreds of thousands of people around the world. They're looking to grow awareness of and support for science at all levels, from local schools to federal agencies and governments globally. The march organizers say that science has been mischaracterized as a partisan issue, enabling lawmakers to reject overwhelming scientific evidence on a matter of critical public interest. They encourage everyone in the community to march with them, adding, "It's time for people who support scientific research and policies based on scientific evidence to take a public stand and be counted." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The University of California has announced that it will halt its investments in private prison companies, removing $25 million in investments from Corrections Corporations of America, G4S, and GEO Group, Inc., the Los Angeles Times reports. The UC system becomes the first public education institution to end its holdings in private prisons. Columbia University, which is private, led the way last year as the first higher learning institute to sever its financial ties with private prison companies. Last year, the Obama administration announced a decision to stop using private prisons due to rampant abuses of prisoners and other serious problems, as ECM reported, though the Trump administration later reversed that decision. The UC divestment decision follows pressure from the African Black Coalition on its website. The group's political director, Yoel Hale, called the decision historic, adding, "Divesting $25 million is a good step towards shutting down private prisons by starving them of capital. The victory belongs to the masses of our people languishing behind America's mass incarceration system." The private prison corporations have repeatedly defended their practices and insisted that they are accountable. Pablo Pez, GEO Group's Vice President of Corporate Relations, told the LA Times that criticisms are based on politically motivated sources to advance what he calls the inaccurate notion that private prisons are somehow unaccountable. However, CCA and GEO Group, two of the largest private prisons, have been sued for human rights abuses, including sexual assault, physical abuse, forced labor, and the refusal to provide medical care. Use of private prisons by the federal government alone grew nearly 800% from 1980 to 2013. Some states, including California, have also used private prisons, which also run immigration detention facilities. According to a report by the U.S. Inspector General, disturbances in several federal contract prisons resulted in extensive property damage, bodily injury, and the death of a correctional officer. That report analyzed 14 contract prisons and found they were worse than government-run prisons in most categories, including higher rates of assaults by inmates, contraband seized, and lockdowns. The report also found prisoners were thrown in solitary confinement without justification for extensive periods, a violation of federal rules. Some inmates were even denied basic medical care. California turned to private prisons when the state was under orders by a federal judge to ease prison overcrowding several years ago. California still houses around 6,000 inmates in private prisons that are in business to make money off keeping people in prison, but that may soon change. Assembly Bill 1320, a measure to end California's reliance on private prisons, is also advancing through the legislature, passing the Assembly Public Safety Committee earlier this month, News Review reports in Sacramento. If approved, the bill would end new contracts with private prisons next year and phase out all use of private prisons by the state over the next decade. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is Liz Albert with East County Magazine's Sports Report. San Diego State has been selected to host the first and second rounds of the 2022 NCAA Division I Men's Basketball Championship. The NCAA Division I Men's Basketball Committee announced Tuesday. This is the fifth time SDSU and Viejas Arena at Aztec Bowl have been picked to serve as the host for the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. The Aztecs also host the first and second rounds of the NCAA Division I Men's Basketball Championship in 2018. In 2022, San Diego State will serve as the host institution and, should the Aztecs qualify for the NCAA tournament, will not be eligible to play in San Diego. The games are scheduled to be played on March 18th and March 20th. San Diego State and Viejas Arena previously hosted the first and second rounds of the NCAA Division I Men's Basketball Championship in 2001, 2006, and 2014. Also hosting the first and second rounds are Furman and the Southern Conference, Duquesne, the NAAC, TCU, Marquette, Cincinnati, and Oregon State. Regional sites are hosted by Pennsylvania, Northwestern, UTSA, and San Antonio, and the Pac-12. The 2022 Final Four will be held in New Orleans.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a health alert from the County of San Diego. A bat caught alive at the San Diego Zoo Safari Park has tested positive for rabies, the County of San Diego Health and Human Services Agency announced Monday. County officials are urging anyone who may have touched the bat to contact county health officials as soon as possible at 619-692-8499. The bat was captured near the Oasis Deli in Nairobi Village Saturday afternoon by park staff. It was a wild bat, not part of the park's collection. Dr. Wilma Wooten, county public health officer, says, "We want to be sure that no one had contact with the bat because human rabies is usually fatal without prompt post-exposure vaccine and treatment." She adds people should always stay away from bats and other wild animals to prevent possible exposure to rabies. If you see a bat, dead or alive, don't touch it. It's possible for rabies to be transmitted through a bat bite or without a bite. If a bat's saliva comes in contact with a cut on the skin or with the person's eyes, nose, or mouth. The best way to prevent rabies is to avoid contact with wild and stray animals, said county officials. Also, make sure any domestic pets are up to date on rabies vaccinations. Last summer, two other bats were discovered in the same location in the safari park that tested positive for rabies. Bats are the most common animal to be tested positive for rabies in San Diego County.
This is Cindy Hanna with a public service announcement from the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency, or the DEA. Each year, the DEA holds a Prescription Drug Takeback Day. Residents are encouraged to turn in unused prescription drugs and avoid having them fall into the hands of thieves or drug abusers or children. This year, the event will be held on April 29th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Locations in East County include the Alpine and Lemon Grove Sheriff's Substations, El Cajon and La Mesa Police Departments, the parking lots at Walgreens in Lakeside and Santee, Steel Canyon High School in Spring Valley, and the parking booth on Canyon Crest Drive at San Diego State University. For more locations across San Diego County, visit DEA.gov. For help with prescription drug abuse, you can call 877-662-6384.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes a star party in Julian, an Echo Folk Musical and Mission Trails for Earth Day, Open Farm Days, and animal shows at the Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona, Jazz Sunday at the La Mesa Wine Works, and a Clint Black concert at Sequon.
Plus, we'll tell you about coming attractions including Lakeside's Rodeo and Western Days Parade, a wine festival in Jamul, El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert Series, Vintage Alpine, a Butterfly Festival, America on Main Street, and much, much more.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
You're invited to a star party at William Heiss County Park in Julian this Saturday, April 22nd, starting at 7 p.m. with the Curiosity Peak Observatory and the Julian Dark Sky Network. The event celebrates International Dark Sky Week. Organizers state, "Join us to travel through space and time and get to see what our local starry nights have to offer. You will get to see planets, moon, star clusters, nebula, galaxies, and Jupiter with all its moons. Participants are encouraged to bring binoculars. Telescopes will also be set up. The event includes a guided tour and orientation of the night sky, and astronomers will be on hand to answer questions. For more information, you can call 619-354-9258.
Husband and wife musical duo John and Sabine Sherman will present the world premiere of their play titled Dryad, an Echo Folk Musical in One Magical Act, at the beautiful Mission Trails Regional Park Amphitheater on Earth Day, Saturday, April 22nd at 3 p.m. With eight original tree-friendly songs, the story tells of a dryad, the spirit of an oak tree inspiring a man through music and the magic of nature to help save her forest. With only a guitar and their self-made branch flutes as instrumental backup for their songs, the Sherman hope to inspire renewed love for the uniquely beautiful bioregion of Southern California. For more information, you can visit mtrp.org.
The Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona invites you to an open farm and show this Saturday and Sunday, April 22nd and 23rd. The fun starts at 1 p.m. for an afternoon featuring friendly farm animals and curious camels. At 1:30, there's an animal show featuring performing parrots, racing turkeys, working farm dogs, and majestic camels. You can also ride camels, pet them, and get great selfies while feeding treats to these gentle giants. Plus, visit a mini-farm animal petting zoo, and you can shop for camel milk chocolate, lotions, and soaps in the gift shop. For details, see cameldairy.com.
It's Jazz Sunday at La Mesa Wine Works this Sunday, April 23rd, from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. Strodingers, Jazz Cats, a local San Diego group of jazz musicians, will be playing all styles of jazz from bebop to hard bop, fusion, and Latin. For more information on this and other musical events, you can check out lamesawineworks.com.
Clint Black, the country music superstar, is back with his first album in 10 years, and he'll be performing at Sequon's Live Up Close Theater on April 23rd and 24th. He sold over 20 million albums worldwide, including 22 number one hits. Recordings such as A Better Man, Killin' Time, When I Say I Do, and Nothing But the Taillights have won honors from the Grammys Country Music Association, Academy of Country Music, American Music Awards, plus membership in the Grand Ole Opry. For tickets, you can visit sequon.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The 53rd Annual Lakeside Rodeo brings the exciting action of the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association to the Lakeside Arena April 28th, 29th, and 30th, with four full rodeo performances featuring the seven events of rodeo, bull riding, bareback riding, saddle bronc riding, steer wrestling, capped roping, barrel racing, tie-down roping, and team roping. In addition, the Kid Stick Horse Race is hilarious to watch at each performance. You'll also find vendors to visit, snack bars and tasty treats, beer, and a specialty food booth. All proceeds benefit the youth of Lakeside. For more information and a full schedule of events, visit lakesiderodeo.com.
The 52nd Annual Lakeside Western Days Parade will be held on April 29th starting at 9:35 a.m. This year's theme is Courage, Honor, and Sacrifice, a salute to our law enforcement. The Western Days Parade is a highlight of Lakeside's Western Days, which also includes the Lakeside Rodeo April 28th through the 30th to benefit local youth in Lakeside. The parade route is along Woodside and Main Avenues. For details, visit lakesidechamber.org.
You can savor the flavors of local wines and foods at the second annual wine festival on April 29th from 12:30 to 3:30 p.m. at St. Pius X Catholic Church in Hamul. This event will feature wines from eight wineries along Highway 94, East County's newest emerging wine region. For more information, you can call 619-669-0085.
The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College will host its Spring Butterfly and Garden Festival on Saturday, April 29th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Activities include butterfly pavilion and garden tours, butterfly releases, face painting, kids activities and craft vendors, animal exhibitors, educational exhibits, and presentations, edible, ornamental, and native plant sales. You can also sign up for landscape design consultations. For more information, visit thegarden.org.
In conjunction with the Spring Garden Festival and the Butterfly Festival at Cuyamaca College in Rancho San Diego, the Heritage of the Americas Museum holds a very special drawing each year, the Five Choices Dream Drawing. The drawing will take place at the museum on Saturday, April 29th at 2:30 p.m. The prizes represent the four wings of the museum: natural history, archaeology, anthropology, and art. Proceeds from the drawing will support the nonprofit museum's educational programs that benefit over 5,000 local school children each year. For details, you can visit heritageoftheamericasmuseum.com.
The Lemon Grove Historical Society and Lemon Grove Library are teaming up to present an encore lecture from History Alive, The Art of the Quilt, with quilt historian Sylvia Wallace. This event will be held at the Lemon Grove Library on April 29th at 2 p.m. Wallace's fabulous quilt collection tells the story along with her words as she traces the quilt from the Egyptians to modern times. From shroud to domestic necessity to political statement to work of art, quilts have emerged not only as a treasured family heirloom but as museum-quality textile artworks.
El Cajon's Friday Night Dinner and Concert Series starts May 5th and will continue all summer long through September 29th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Prescott Promenade on Main Street in downtown El Cajon. Guests are encouraged to arrive early to dine at local restaurants or bring your picnic and lawn chairs. You can see the full lineup of bands at downtownelcajon.com.
Friends of East County Arts, Inc., which has supported the arts in East County since 1984, will present Blooming Fashions, a fashion show at the El Cajon Elks Club on Saturday, May 6th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. This year's event promises participants a relaxing afternoon of complimentary champagne, a catered lunch, and the latest fashions from Macy's at Grossmont Center.
The Alpine Garden Club presents the Waterwise and Butterflies Plant Sale and Festival in Alpine on Saturday, May 6th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Christ the King Episcopal Church in Alpine. Guests will see birds of prey, hummingbirds, shop at vendor booths, and enjoy opportunity drawings and a silent auction. There will also be a Monarch Mania with butterfly releases at noon, with Monarch host plants for sale at Barron's Market in the Alpine Creek and Town Center.
The 27th Annual Vintage Alpine Event will be held on May 7th from 1 to 4 p.m. This wine experience in the country will take place in the lovely gardens at Summer's Pass Farms on Old Highway in Flint Springs, hosted by the Alpine Kiwanis Club. Guests will savor premium wines from California and around the world, also sampling the best that local restaurants from across San Diego County have to offer. The event also includes live music in a garden setting and a silent auction. All proceeds will benefit children's causes across our region. For tickets and details, you can go to vintagealpine.org.
The San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra will present its spring concert on May 7th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the College Avenue Baptist Church, performing Mozart's Requiem, one of the master's greatest works. In addition, the musical group will present a salute to Andrew Lloyd Webber, showcasing his unforgettable Broadway musical songs from Phantom of the Opera, Cats, and more. For tickets and details, you can visit sandiegofestivalchorus.org.
America on Main Street, a family fun celebration honoring the American spirit, will be held in downtown El Cajon on May 16th. The event includes four stages with live entertainment, a Ferris wheel, petting zoo, hayride, pony rides, kids games, and crafts. This year's entertainment reflects cultures found in our region. Performers include Chase Avenue Folklorio Dancers, Suzuki Violins, Flying Hills Fame, USA Taekwondo Center, Great Musical Sounds, CYT, Latin Percussion, Wasan Jarbo Folkloric Dance. For details, you can visit AmericaOnMainStreet.org.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today, my very special guest is John Ford. He is a Navy veteran, and he now has his own business with Lifesaver Pool Fencing in San Diego, but it's been a long journey getting there. And we're here to talk about what happens and how a young 23-year-old veteran can come back and wind up homeless on the streets of San Diego for a little while before he was able to pick himself up and go on with this wonderful career. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, I understand that both you and your wife were in the military. Can you tell us where you served?
That's correct. We were both stationed at 32nd Street Naval Bases, where we separated from the military, and naturally, we both served in Great Lakes, Illinois, also, where everybody does boot camp.
And then you had some time in the Middle East also?
Yes. That was my first deployment, was out to Kuwait, Dubai, that area.
Yeah, so you were in a combat zone over there, too. So you came back. I understand that both of you got out of the service about the same time because your wife had been through a traumatic experience, an assault. So you got your honorable discharge so that you could be out too and be supportive of her. And what happened when you got back here and you got out? You know, you're on your own all of a sudden. How tough was it to adapt? What happened?
So right after I got my general with honorable conditions, my wife and I, we were looking at our apartment, trying to figure out what we were going to do. We had our rent coming up. We had utilities coming up. And we were just trying to figure out different jobs that would even work for us that were nearby. What we're going to do for transportation. I had actually just gotten my motorcycle, which was my only means of transportation, was stolen 2 days before that
well. Oh, my goodness.
So it was quite a week for us.
Yeah. And I know you've told me that the military was not as supportive as they probably should have been regarding the conditions with her assault, that she was dealing with retaliation and going through a lot of counseling after this trauma as well. So she wasn't even really quite ready to get out in the job force when she first came back, which really kind of put all the burden on your shoulders at first.
That's true. Our life was a total wreck as soon as we got out of the military. Yeah. It was like Uncle Sam dropped us off at the curb and said, good luck, kid. Here's $5.
Awful. So was there any kind of program at all? Did they put you through any kind of transition job training program? Did you get any money at all to help you transition back into civilian life? How does that work?
So there were some support systems in place. There's a TAPS class, which mm-hmm. is a week-long class to help people readjust back to civilian life. And they have a couple of different resources as far as pursuing further education.
And how helpful were those resources for you?
I found them to be extremely ineffective because they seemed like just programs to get me to commit to $45,000 worth of debt so that I can get a degree and something that isn't actually hiring at this time.
So they didn't steer you toward, for example, maybe community college courses where you can go into something that's less expensive. And
ironically, the community colleges were not well represented there because as soon as I started looking around on my own, I found that there was numerous community colleges in San Diego that welcome veterans with arms wide open.
Wow.
And they have some really great outreach programs there, which is one of the ways to get in contact with the SSVF mm-hmm. Grant mm-hmm. program. That's what my wife and I used. And it was a really cool program for service members or people who get out. It will guarantee up to 6 months of our rents, which really helped us out. We didn't end up needing to use it for that long. Mm-hmm. It did take a little while for that to get into place. I think we were probably on a wait list for about 5.5 months.
Wow. So what did you do during that 5.5 months? That's not very much. I know you told me before we went mm-hmm. on the air, it's only about $1,100 a month. Can you really rent anything in San Diego for $1,100 a month?
That's correct. So it's different based on people's income and what their actual individual family needs are. Because my wife and I didn't have a child, we were only counted as two people. We do have a 90-pound dog, and I think he counts. But
we've met him. He's a gorgeous Doberman, but yes, that makes it even more difficult. So many landlords won't take pets.
So they ended up assessing our budget and said that the only place that we could rent was a 500-square-foot apartment in Vista, California, which was not attached to the county court complex and jail, but it definitely was right bordered up on the same parking lot. And whenever they let the drunk tank go in the morning, they would all kind of mosey through the
So here you've got your wife, who's a survivor of assault, and they wanted her to rent a place next to where they let all the drunks loose.
Yeah, there was
in a 500-square-foot apartment with a 90-pound dog.
Yeah, there was no coordination between the groups, but it was definitely not a good rehabilitation environment when there's drunk people knocking on the door at 10 a.m. going, "Hey, can I have a beer? Or do you have a cigarette? Or
gosh,
can I use your phone?"
That's terrible to treat our veterans that way. So what did you do? How did you wind up becoming homeless? Now, were you living in tents on the street or in your van, or what did you do?
So I think to jump back a little bit, as mm-hmm. soon as I got my DD-214 and my wife got her DD-214, our discharge paperwork, I got a call from my best friend from high school's dad from Northern California saying that there was a great opportunity to open up a franchise for Lifesaver down in San Diego. Mm-hmm. I just needed to do a little bit of training and he'd help me out. And I really owe all of my success, at least my initial success, and there's more success to be dealt with later from other people who helped me out. Mm-hmm. But to Mark Hinkle of Lifesaver Pool Fins of Northern California.
Very good. So it's nice that you had a friend that threw a lifeline, so to speak. I hate to think what happens to young vets coming home like that don't have a good buddy like that.
Yeah.
So at any rate, though, it took some time to get established with your own franchise because, of course, you had to go through training, that initial learning period. So how did you guys survive financially during that time?
So we couch surfed for a few weeks while I was doing training with Mark Hinkle and my friend Logan mm-hmm. up there in Northern California. And then we had to make a decision on what to do. We could just hang out up in Northern California and couch surf relatively comfortably mm-hmm. And just wait for someone to call and hopefully schedule an estimate and then sell a pool fence that way. Or we can go back down to San Diego and kind of take the bull by the horns and try and make some sales happen and then be in that area to finally move on a property when we finally found one that would fit the budget. Mm-hmm. And the renting market then was crazy. It was like something would pop up and an hour later they'd have three applications.
Yeah.
And being homeless with a 90-pound dog without a job didn't really look that great compared to everybody else. So.
Yeah, very challenging.
Yeah.
So were you in your van for a while?
Yeah, so my wife and I and our dog lived in that van for about 6 months.
Wow.
And which is illegal in San Diego.
Yeah, did you get hassled and harassed by the police? Or did you ever get anything taken? What happened?
We never got anything stolen from us. We did get in a couple of close encounters with some sketchy people here and there. But for the most part, the police, when they'd come out, they would see two young kids living in a van and go, you know, I hope these guys sort it out and kind of leave us be.
So they were nice about it.
Yes, and they just say, make sure you're out of here in the morning. So,
well, that's good. Yeah. That's good to hear. So eventually you were able to not have to live in the van anymore. Where did you find a place after that?
So that was that SSVF grant that I was talking about through Interfaith Community Services. That was the outreach group that we chose to go with. They got us into that 500-square-foot apartment in Vista, and unfortunately they had a long contract with that. I'm sure there's many ins and outs of the legal structure for how to get people into housing like that and where the money comes from and how they structure those deals. But I really don't think that, I think in the end, the veterans are really paying for it, because my wife and I were in a 500 square foot apartment trying to start a business. Meanwhile, half of our neighbors are drug dealers and the other half are gang members. So like, and we had like, that's not completely true. There was a few other veterans in the same situation that we were scattered around.
Still not exactly the supportive environment that we want. It puts you at risk of being a crime victim or worse. But despite all that, you're managing to be a success now, I understand. So tell me how the Lifesaver pool fencing business is going for you now.
So it's going really well. It's something I love about business. It's very self-regulating market. Mm-hmm. It's something you can jump into not really knowing much about it, and then you're going to get an education really quick. It's probably going to be very expensive, but you're going to get an education.
But pool fencing is so important. I know that in San Diego County, drowning is, I believe, the number one cause of deaths among young children locally, and it seems like no matter how many safety tips we put out there, every year we're having to report those tragic stories of families having these horrific losses. Do you have a couple of pool safety tips you can share with our listeners as long as we're talking about that?
Absolutely. So a pool fence is just one layer of safety in a many layer system, and you really want to have as much protection as you possibly can. At the end of the day, being just having good supervision over your children, or if you're having a party, everyone's children, because there's a lot going on. But there's a few new pool alarms out there that are really great on the pool safety store. Mm-hmm. We have a couple of new fences that are substantially stronger.
Yeah, I would add, if you have an older home, sometimes people think, you know, hey, it's fenced when they buy a house. And a lot of times those fences really aren't safe for young children. I know when we bought our home, it's been, you know, 20 years ago, but my daughter was 4 at the time, and the realtor was telling us, oh, and not to worry, the pool has a fence. And as she was speaking, my 4-year-old climbed through it.
Oh my gosh.
It was not secure at all. Not secure. We wound up actually taking the pool out. It was leaking and had other problems. But if we hadn't, we would have had to replace all of the fencing, not only around the pool, but it triggered a, with the zoning and stuff, basically the fencing around the entire property.
Everything got an inspection.
Yeah, we would have had to replace all the fencing around the whole property. It wasn't high enough. Yeah. So there's a lot to learn about pool fencing, and it seems like a big investment, but it's certainly worth it over the loss of a child.
And that's exactly why we sell our product with a lifetime warranty, because it is a significant investment, and I want people to be comfortable with that investment, that if they ever have an issue, they'll see my smiling face within 2 days to come fix it for them.
Yeah. And how is your wife doing now with all that she'd been through?
She's doing really well. She's gotten a lot better treatment since then. She's kind of managing her own program instead of just kind of getting passed through the system.
Mm-hmm. Did she go through that of with so many vets? They sort of medicate them up the yin-yang rather than really dealing with the psychological trauma they've endured.
So she ended up with 3 different diagnoses over the course of 1 month.
Wow.
And then the next month she got an additional 2 different diagnoses for the exact same symptoms. So they gave her different medications for all of those, and just having all of those things together, not having clear information, having more than one doctor that don't talk together very well.
Yeah, bad
and news. Just the whole VA system in general seems like walking into a hospital in a third world country.
Yeah, we just interviewed a doctor a couple of weeks ago who talked about the over-medication of so many of these veterans, especially young veterans. Some of them were actually dying in their sleep from a combination of psychiatric drugs that would just stop their heart. So it can be very, very dangerous. So I'm glad to hear from you that she's off of all of that now. And
me too.
Yeah.
I'm glad about it. Also, we've started a couple of other things. We've really been focusing on our diet with the information that's just on the web. Mm-hmm. Now it's really been easy for us to educate ourselves, not only with business, but also in nutrition, kind of pick up where we feel our education left off.
Very good. Do you have any advice out there for other young veterans that may be just now getting out of the service in terms of anything you found in the way of resources out there, if not with the military, even outside of the military, where you could find out about maybe some better choices?
I would say to take every day like it's P-days back in boot camp, and that means just, you know, there's probably a few more months of this where things are going to be down, but just keep your head down and keep going, and things will get better soon because you can move a mountain with enough dedication and just pursuing what you really want and just going after it over and over again, even when, you know, life tells you no. Tell life I don't think so and keep going.
There you go. Well, we know our military veterans are tough, and if they survive the things they go through in combat and war zones, then certainly you can get through this too, even if it's tough. If listeners out there, John, want to learn more, either learn more about Lifesaver pool fencing, or they want to just get in touch with you to talk about, you know, maybe their own experiences or people who may have questions, how can they reach you?
So you can email me at j.ford@poolfence.com. You can find my website, www.poolfencesandiego.com. I'm also on Facebook, Lifesaver Pool Fence San Diego, or at Best Pool Fence. You can find me on Instagram.
Okay. Well, very good. John, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, and thank you also for your service to our country.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a public service announcement from Heartland Fire and Rescue. Are you prepared for a disaster such as an earthquake or firestorm? Heartland Fire and Rescue invites you to attend a Community Emergency Response Team, or CERT, Academy. Free disaster training will be taught by members of Heartland Fire and Rescue and Santee Fire Department in classes that begin May 6th. There are six classes held on consecutive Saturdays from 8:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. The CERT program educates people about disaster preparedness and hazards that may impact the area where they live. These free CERT lessons will train you in basic disaster response skills such as fire safety, light search and rescue, team organization, and disaster medical operations. Using the training taught in a classroom and during drill exercises, CERT members will be better prepared to also assist others in their neighborhood or workplace after a disaster if professional responders are not immediately available. Registration is required. You can learn more and register at heartlandfire.org. Due to the limited class size, the East County CERT training offered by Heartland Fire and Rescue is restricted to residents of El Cajon, La Mesa, Lemon Grove, and Santee. The CERT program is run by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. If you live in another community not included in Heartland's Fires program, you can visit FEMA.gov. Put CERT into the search bar to find a CERT program in your neighborhood.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.